Flying over deep green sea, towards grey towering cliffs topped with grass. Jurassic Coast, Dorset, England. Two people are sitting on a small boat named Susie B.
The remains of a dragon have just been discovered in the cliffs of Dorset on the southeast coast of England. One that has been hidden in the rocks for 200 million years. It was an enormous marine reptile that ruled the seas at the same time as the dinosaurs ruled the land.
A computer-generated image.
Scientifically, it's called an ichthyosaur. Since Jurassic times, its fossilized bones have been locked away in these cliffs. But now we have a chance to reveal it and its story.
Lots and lots of bone in there.
On the cliff face.
The bones are so well preserved, it may be able to give us new insights into the lives of these remarkable creatures. Together with the team of scientists, we will reconstruct the skeleton and compare it to animals alive today.
Sharks and dolphins.
We'll try to understand how it looked.
We have actual preservation of the skin of our ichthyosaur.
How extraordinary. And how it survived in the open ocean. Could this be a completely new species of ichthyosaur? Our search for evidence will lead us into an intriguing forensic investigation into how it died.
I think you're looking at a 200 million year old murder mystery.
Solving that mystery will throw light on the extraordinary world in the Jurassic seas that once existed just off our shores.
BBC, Attenborough and the Sea Dragon. Presented by David Attenborough.
The story of this extraordinary dragon starts here in Dorset on the south coast of England, one of the most important geological sites in the world, the Jurassic Coast.
Towering cliffs.
It stretches for almost 100 miles from Devon to Dorset. And it was here that the early geologists first collected evidence that once the world was ruled by monstrous reptiles, quite unlike anything alive on Earth today.
Inaccessible coves and beaches.
Evidence of creatures that existed all that time ago can still be found on these beaches. Fossil collectors have been coming here for literally centuries. And these rapidly eroding cliffs are providing them with a continuous supply of exciting things to find. I started looking for fossils when I was a boy, and I've never lost the feeling of excitement and anticipation of what one might discover.
He steps across the rocky beach.
The commonest fossils here are coiled shells called ammonites. And you can find them all over the place. There's one here on this boulder. You can see the whorls there, but it's mostly been worn away by the sea. But sometimes, if you're lucky, you can find nodules like this. And if you look at them, you can see there's the edge there of an ammonite. And if I hit it, I put on protective glasses, if I hit it, it should.
An intricate fossil.
How about that? Wow. What a find. Ammonites, in fact, are quite common on this beach. But every now and again, something truly rare and spectacular is found here. And quite often by this man. One of the most skilled fossil hunters I know. Chris Moore has been collecting fossils here for more than 30 years. Recently, he came across a boulder which he thought might contain something unusual.
Back in his workshop, he exposed a mosaic of small, beautifully preserved bones, which he knew straight away were the front fins, the paddles, of an ichthyosaur. But they were unlike any he had ever seen before.
The bones are tiny oblongs packed together in a regular pattern. A view of the rocky coastline.
I still collect fossils. I even have the remains of an ichthyosaur, a small one of a kind that's relatively common.
This was collected by Chris about 10 years ago in Dorset. I never found anything as beautiful as this. It's got jaws, and it's got teeth, and it's got paddles. And Dorset was the very first place where they found a really complete skeleton of one of these creatures. This is a picture of it, published for the very first time in 1814. Well, people thought it was some kind of monster, but what was it? They thought it was a kind of cross between a reptile and a fish. So they called it an ichthyosaur, a fish lizard or sea dragon.
Since that time, many fossil fragments of ichthyosaurs have been discovered on the Jurassic coast. But complete skeletons are very rare. The particular one that Chris has just found is significantly different from any that's ever been found here before.
The Susie B boat.
It's not easy to get to the beach where it was discovered. At high tide, the only way to do so is by boat.
David's on board.
I asked Chris where the rest of the skeleton might still lie.
It's in the very top limestone bed where the cliffs are at the lowest point. It's got about 2 metres on top of clay. We'll have to clear this material off till we get to the limestone bed.
It's hard work.
It's a lot of digging, yeah. And also we have to do it really before the winter turns again and the weather gets bad, because there's a chance that the next landslip will just push it off onto the beach and destroy it.
In Jurassic times, sea covered all this area. On its floor, sediments washed down from the land turned into layers of shales and limestone. The land rose, the sea retreated, and now in the rocks you can find the remains of the creatures that once lived in those ancient waters.
Prehistoric creatures.
As well as the remains of ammonites, there are the bones of fish such as sharks. But the top predators at this time were reptiles, ichthyosaurs. They dominated the seas for more than 150 million years.
It looks similar to a shark and has a long dolphin-like nose with rows of teeth.
After getting permission to dig, the team clambered down the cliff to the particular lair where the rest of our ichthyosaur skeleton should be lying.
I'm going to need at least another metre because I need to drop down for the next bit.
It's dangerous work. These cliffs occasionally collapse without warning.
Tethered by ropes, the archaeologists dig through the dry earth with shovels.
To make sure that they don't damage any of the fossils, the team do all the digging by hand.
It's just loads of roots.
Tons of clay have to be removed before they even reach the layer of limestone where they hope the rest of the bones still lie.
A view of the coast from the air.
It was on this very coast that the first complete skeleton of an ichthyosaur was discovered. It was found in the 19th century by a remarkable woman called Mary Anning. Mary lived in the little town of Lyme Regis, the daughter of a cabinet maker who collected fossils as a hobby. When Mary was only 11, her father died, so she and her brother started selling fossils to visitors to support their widowed mother.
David climbs a grand curving stone staircase, past paintings and busts.
Lyme Regis Museum now devotes a whole gallery to her and her finds.
Mary had an extraordinary talent for finding fossils, and in 1811, she discovered this gigantic creature, the like of which no one had ever seen before. Dinosaurs had not yet been discovered. No one had any idea that way back in prehistory there were such gigantic creatures. So this caused a sensation.
It was then that the popular name sea dragon was given to these prehistoric monsters. Scientists speculated on how they lived, and artists tried to imagine what they must have looked like and how they behaved.
Black and white drawings of dragon-like creatures with sharp teeth and bulging eyes.
Back at the cliff face, Chris and his team are hard at it, but they haven't found any more bones.
Stones and soil fall from the side of the cliff. Then they loosen a large slab, which tumbles heavily.
This is a massive piece. Tombstone.
Right, ready?
Chris is convinced that the skeleton to which the paddles belonged must be somewhere here, and they check every rock.
Beautiful shale.
They use a chisel to split the rock.
Have we?
Anything interesting?
Moment of truth.
Nothing.
Just push it off.
Yeah.
It crashes to the beach below.
Is there anything showing?
Nothing off here.
Oh, gosh, that's hard work.
Lifting more slabs.
I hope there's something here. I almost don't want to look. There's a bone.
Loads of bone going all the way. There's bone there.
Oh, there's something here.
At long last, the team's efforts are rewarded.
We've got some bones here.
Oh, yeah. Loads. Yeah, there's loads of bones.
Fantastic. Ah, what's this? Is that a vertebrae?
But the bones are not in the position the team had expected to find them. Instead of lying across the face of the cliff, the skeleton seems to be bending back into it.
We're going to have to go down through there.
It means much more work. And to make matters worse, a storm is brewing.
The rain's just starting, but I think we've got to make a bit of a run for it.
They huddle under a tarpaulin on the cliff top as the rain lashes down.
We won't be working anymore in this for the moment. It's torrential. Beautiful rainbow, though.
A rainbow will be a little comfort if the storm persists. Rough seas and heavy downpours can cause landslips, which could easily destroy any chance of retrieving the bones.
Crashing waves.
It was after just such a storm that Chris found the front limbs, the paddles, of our sea dragon. They convinced him that the fossil was something special. You can see why when you compare them to the paddles of the kind of ichthyosaur that's usually found here.
This is an adult, and this is the paddle of this creature. And if you compare it to this one...
Another fossil.
Oh, it's huge. Oh, yeah.
I've never seen anything quite like it.
There are half a dozen rows of digits there, and how many there?
I think there's at least 9 or 10 crossways, and obviously, you know, many more in length.
So it's getting on for twice the number of digits.
And the whole shape of the fin is completely different.
Quite different. And must be new, therefore?
I think so. I've never seen anything quite like it.
How exciting.
It's extremely rare to find a new species of ichthyosaur these days. Only 9 have been discovered here in the last 200 years. But can these strange paddles tell us something about how this odd ichthyosaur lived? To try and find out, we're going to construct a three-dimensional model. To do that, we first need to have the paddles scanned. So Chris is taking them to Southampton University. Here, the engineering department has one of the largest high-resolution scanners in the country. It's not every day someone walks in with a 200 million-year-old sea reptile.
The slab of rock containing the fossil is strapped into place.
The machine can scan objects of all different shapes and sizes, from ancient coins to the components of spacecraft.
The X-ray sign, then the fossil revolving.
To create a picture, the scanner takes thousands of X-ray images in cross sections through the fossil as it rotates.
Looking at images on monitors.
It's not long before the first images appear.
That's amazing. Looks really clear. You can even see the bones laying underneath the paddle.
At the moment, we're just doing one section. Yeah. We're going to do multiple scans down the specimen and build it all back together into a three-dimensional volume.
The scans of the paddles are sent to Bristol University. Here, scientists can isolate the image of each bone within the rock and then assemble them to create a detailed three-dimensional model.
A computer-generated image.
The team is particularly excited by the shape and structure of these paddles, and I've come to find out why.
Benjamin Moon.
We've got a complete paddle here, taken from the bones itself, fully reconstructed, re-articulated. So this is as close as we can get to what it would have looked like. We can actually start using this paddle to try and tell us what species it might have been. Because of the size of the paddle and the way that some of these bones articulate with each other, it's different to other ichthyosaurus, and so this could be a new species.
Oh, that'd be great.
It would be jolly exciting.
We won't know for sure until we find the rest of the body. But can the paddles tell us something about the way in which this creature swam?
There are a lot of bones in this paddle, which would have been good for holding steady and also for allowing it to be manoeuvrable in the water.
There would have been cartilage around that, wouldn't there, somewhere else?
Yes. All of the gaps between the bones would have been filled in with cartilage, and even further around the paddle itself, giving it a paddle-like shape, giving it a cross-section, a bit like an aerofoil, so that it could cut straight through the water.
Could they fold them into the side?
Probably not. Looking at the muscles and where they attach, it suggests these are moving up and down, helping it to turn very quickly or keeping it on the straight and narrow when it wants to be a little more sedate.
A lush, forested coastline.
The shape of the paddles and the way they moved seems very like the way an animal alive today uses its paddles. That animal usually lives in tropical waters like these in the Caribbean. The sea here is warm, with temperatures much like they would have been in Jurassic times around Britain. And the animal in question is the dolphin.
A view of one underwater.
Dolphins, of course, are mammals, not reptiles like ichthyosaurs. Nonetheless, the two groups have bodies shaped in very similar ways. The front fins, or paddles, of both would have helped to steady themselves as they turn and cut through the water. And both have similar dorsal fins. So, although they live 200 million years apart, dolphins and ichthyosaurs share many physical characteristics. And that's because they evolved in similar ways as a response to a similar environment.
A dolphin somersaults in the air, then swimming along with a large pod.
Like dolphins, ichthyosaurs evolved from ancestors that had once lived on land. As they became adapted to life in water, they lost the ability to walk. Their bodies became more streamlined and their forelimbs turned into paddles to help them swim. But ichthyosaurs do differ from dolphins in two striking ways.
Dozens of dolphins jumping out of the water as they swim.
Dolphins have tails that are flattened horizontally, and they drive themselves forward by beating their tails up and down. But we know from their fossils that ichthyosaur tails were flattened vertically, like those of sharks, so they must have swum in the same sort of way, by sweeping their tails from side to side.
Wiggling as it swims.
Ichthyosaurs, unlike dolphins, also had back paddles. They too would have helped stabilise them as they swam.
The 3D image of the paddle.
And what's more, the paddles of our ichthyosaur are particularly large and long, rather like those of the oceanic white-tip shark.
One swimming along.
That shape helps the white tip to cruise for long distances with very little expenditure of energy in their search for food.
Swimming through dark waters.
So it could be that our ichthyosaur was also a long-distance traveller and only an infrequent visitor to the Lyme Regis seas, which could be why no one has ever found one of these here before.
The archaeologists on the cliff face.
Back at the dig site, the rain has stopped at last. But the storm was a reminder that winter is on its way. The team must try to extract the rest of the dragon's body before worse weather arrives.
That's how hard the rock is. It's actually smashed the end off the chisel. So you can see what we're dealing with.
A bent chisel, then the growing pile of grey stony earth at the base of the cliff. Hammering in a chisel.
At last, they find signs of the rest of the skeleton.
Lots and lots of bone in there. Ribs and all sorts of stuff.
And there's another particularly exciting discovery.
It's the skin.
It's the skin?
Yeah, look, oh, really?
They've found signs of fossilised skin.
Rare, isn't it?
Yeah, very rare.
The blocks that contain bones and skin can't be thrown down like the other rocks. They must be carefully strapped up and gently lowered.
It's the first block down. A few more to go, but if they go like that, I'll be very pleased.
2 weeks after they started work, I go down again to check on progress.
How's it going?
Well, quite well so far.
A lot though, shifted.
Yeah, about 20 tonnes of it, I think.
Really?
Yes. How's it doing? Is it caught?
It's OK.
It's OK, yeah.
What do you reckon's in it?
This block's got vertebrae, the other part of the rib cage, and it's definitely got the back paddles in there. You can see a cross-section through them.
While the team continue lowering the huge blocks, Chris shows me what they've already collected.
So, lots over here. Oh, a bit of a wash.
Ah, well, I can see something there.
Ah!
That's more obvious, yeah.
Yeah. Here you can see glinting in the sunlight sections through the backbone, the vertebra column.
Wow.
And these are the ribs that are still attached to the vertebrae. And these are the neurals that come off the backbone.
Spines off the top of the back.
Yeah, but they've actually got skin preserved on them.
No, really?
Yeah,
fossils. Can you see that here?
Well, that's the very black. You can see it on the impression as well.
This is great news, but something puzzles me.
Would the head have been on this side or that side?
Most likely here, in this next slab.
And it's not there?
Not so far.
Oh, boy. How many more tons to go?
Oh. Only a few. OK.
Another large slab of stone is gently lowered towards the beach.
Once the blocks are down on the beach, the team remove as much excess limestone as possible to make them lighter. Even then, they're extremely heavy. So to get them back to Lyme Regis, they're loaded onto a pontoon and towed back by boat.
The slabs of rock are carried onto the long rectangular pontoon, ready to be towed by an inflatable boat. The archaeologists sit with the blocks as they move through the calm sea.
So, for the first time in 200 million years, our strange ichthyosaur once again takes to the water.
A view from above of the long, narrow pontoon being towed and the support boat alongside. In a workshop.
The dig may be over, but the investigation is only just beginning. Now, the work becomes more delicate, involving not sledgehammers, but small vibrating chisels that chip off the limestone in tiny flakes.
A more delicate chisel.
It's detailed work that will take months to complete.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle of things you can't see. It's almost forensic. You don't know the story, you don't know what's inside the block until you reveal it. I've never seen in all my years an ichthyosaur that looked like this. So every other part of the skeleton that we reveal is very exciting because you're never quite sure what's going on, what it's going to look like. And it is, it's very different.
Day after day and week after week, Chris and his team work patiently to expose more of the skeleton. And as they do so, the bones reveal something very intriguing.
Speeded up footage.
I've come down to Chris's workshop to take a look.
It's a bit of a squeeze past the plesiosaur.
It really is an Aladdin's cave. After weeks of work, Chris has exposed the backbones and ribs.
So, gosh, this is it so far?
And in doing so, he's made a startling discovery.
It looks like it's been attacked.
Gosh.
This breakage is all through the rib cage. If you follow one rib, you go along here, down to here, then this piece corresponds to this, which then goes over to here. So,
oh, there, yeah.
One rib is now broken into three pieces.
How extraordinary.
But what's happened here? Here, the vertebra column has been actually pulled away. I'm fairly positive it was done in life. And the paddles, the flippers, have been ripped off.
Where would they go?
Chris brings over his paddle fossils, which seem to fit perfectly.
But they're in a very odd position, aren't they? I mean, they're pointing in the wrong direction.
They should be, basically, in this position and facing the other way up, and they've been ripped off and turned over.
Gosh. Well, where was the head?
The head should be here. That's the very last vertebrae.
Back of the neck?
Yeah. So the head's been torn off. And there's no evidence, there's no teeth or pieces of bone. It's completely gone.
So it's a murder?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was killed.
Did this predator crunch the head, do you think?
Who knows? You know, it's 200 million years ago, so it's a bit of guesswork, really, isn't it?
So it's a murder story without a complete body yet.
To find out more, we need to reveal the rest of the skeleton. So it's all hands on deck.
Speeded up film as the fossil is excavated. One man works on a smaller block. David sits at another slab.
They've even roped me in.
He carefully cuts away at the stone between the bones. He lifts his visor and blows away the dust.
This is more difficult than it looks.
Chris watches him work.
Very good. Could you start on 3 days a week?
Is it all right?
It's good, yeah.
Haven't gone too close to the bone?
No.
Ooh, that's a relief.
But what of the missing head? If it was ripped off, Chris thinks he might still be able to find it somewhere on the beach. So, at every opportunity, he scours the area where the first block was found.
A stormy day.
The best time to look is after a storm, when a strong sea has moved sand and shingle and perhaps revealed the rocks beneath.
He trudges over the stony beach as the waves crash in. A view of the town and beach on a calm day.
To try and deduce just how our ichthyosaur met its fate, we've sent images of the fossil to someone who specialises in investigating the cause of death in prehistoric animals.
You sent me some photographs and I had a look at some of these breaks. Now, first of all, I noticed this here.
If you look, you can just see this bulbous piece on the rib here. This is where the rib has healed after a break and the animal's gone on to live another day.
There's a bite mark here. It runs all the way up the paddle bones.
And you can see that it's healed as well.
Yeah, it's definitely an old injury.
This animal's had a little bit of a bad start in life.
But some of the other breaks tell a different story.
If you look down here, and especially this one, if you look, this fracture here mirrors that fracture there. And then we can see a whole line of fractures where there's no new bone growth. Something has actually crushed this rib cage.
So look here at these neural spines. These are absolutely perfect. And then from here, they're broken all the way down to here. This is the last one that's broken, and then here they're perfect again. So there to there is damaged. On the ribs, there to there is damaged. And here too, and also on some of these belly ribs. So I think there's a bite which goes right across here. That probably reflects the width of,
yes,
the skull of the animal that bit it.
Yeah, so it came in across here. Almost.
Somewhere like that, yeah. There was a massive bite. It caused catastrophic injury. And remember, the rib cage is protecting lungs. This was an air-breathing marine animal. And as a swimmer, these lungs are vital, not just for breathing, but for its buoyancy. So once this rib cage is punctured, and the lungs are punctured, this animal is dead. It can't breathe, and also it's going to sink straight down to the seafloor as well. It's quite likely that the animal that killed this animal, presumably it was looking for food, it didn't get to eat it.
Oh, no, I think it just killed it. Absolutely. It didn't eat it, or else it wouldn't be so intact.
So this probably all took place in the surface water.
Yeah.
But as soon as it had done this injury, this thing just sank like a stone straight down to the seafloor. And then it was lost to the animal that was trying to eat it.
So it looks as if Chris's attack theory might be right. But what type of creature could possibly have inflicted so much damage to our sea dragon? A rather unusual fossil in Chris's collection might give us a clue.
David opens a glass cabinet and takes out a fossil.
This is a fossilised ichthyosaur droppings called a coprolite. And what makes it particularly interesting is that within this piece of dung, you can see fish scales.
They glint in the light.
So that shows that ichthyosaurs were fish eaters. But more than that, this one is even more interesting because in this piece of dung, there are teeth, ichthyosaur teeth. So the animal that produced this was almost certainly a cannibal. It ate other ichthyosaur species.
Could it be that our dragon was killed by one of its own kind?
David turns on the lights and steps into a large warehouse-style storage room.
To find out more, I've come to the Natural History Museum of Stuttgart in Germany. Here, they have one of the most impressive and varied collections of ichthyosaurs in the world. They came in all shapes and sizes. But of all the ichthyosaurs that existed 200 million years ago, there was one which was particularly fearsome.
In the darkened viewing room, David walks alongside an almost complete skeleton.
This is Temnodontosaurus, one of the biggest of the sea dragons so far discovered. They grew up to 10 meters long, and individual bones have been discovered which suggest that they could grow even bigger than that.
The remains of these terrifying sea monsters were discovered in a quarry just outside Stuttgart. These are the biggest complete Temnodontosaurus fossils ever found.
This huge predator had the largest eye known of any animal, which would have given it extremely acute eyesight. Not only that, but the eye was surrounded by a ring of scutes, bony plates, to protect it from the water pressure at depth.
So, with eyes the size of footballs, this monster was able to hunt at all depths of the Jurassic Ocean.
It glides through the dark water.
It also had rows of sharp teeth that would have allowed it to rip apart almost anything.
These teeth are shaped like blades, well suited for cutting into flesh.
And here's another specimen of Temnodontosaurus that is proof positive that it really was a hunter. Here is its stomach. And inside its stomach, you can see these tiny little circular bones, which are the backbones, the vertebrae of a baby ichthyosaur.
So we now know that Temnodontosaurus could devour young ichthyosaurs. But would one have been capable of eating an adult ichthyosaur like ours? Fossils of Temnodontosaurus have been found in other regions, including our own Jurassic coast. So this monster could well be our prime suspect. To build our case further, we're going to analyse another specimen of the same species that was found on the Jurassic coast.
This is the skull of a Temnodontosaurus. And as you can see, it's huge. This specimen was found by Mary Anning on the Dorset coast in the 19th century. And we're hoping that we may be able to use it with the latest techniques to tell us just how powerful these great jaws could be.
So, for the first time ever, our team of scientists are going to attempt to calculate the bite strength of a Temnodontosaurus. The first step is to scan the skull. Not as easy as it sounds. Very few scanners are big enough, but there's one here at the Royal Veterinary College where they're more accustomed to scanning horses.
They unveil the fossil in the back of a lorry.
The Temnodontosaurus skull is 2 meters long and weighs more than 200 kilos. Luckily, it's in two pieces. Otherwise, it couldn't be fitted into even this huge scanner.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, and up.
Four men lift it onto the scanning bed.
Take your hands up.
These scans will help the team to not only reconstruct the Temnodontosaurus's skull, but also work out the size of its jaw muscles. They can then assess the power of this huge predator's bite and see if it was strong enough to kill our ichthyosaur. Chemnodontosaurs are unusual in that they had huge, sharp teeth for cutting through flesh. But how did other ichthyosaurs catch their prey? To get a clue, I've come to see a modern-day predator in action.
A large eye blinks. A crocodile swims through green water, leaving a trail of bubbles in its wake. David is standing by the glass wall of a tank.
That is a Gharial crocodile from Indonesia. Its jaws, as you can see, are not wide and flat like an African crocodile's, but long and thin. And because of that shape, there's very little resistance to the water, so they can snatch fish, which they do very effectively. They're very formidable animals indeed.
Holding its legs out to the side, the crocodile glides effortlessly to the bottom of the tank. Above the water, the crocodile snaps up its prey.
Ichthyosaurs must have fed in much the same way as that. Their jaws were very similar to those of the goeal. Simple studs to grip the prey, no need to chew it, because the jaws at the back were quite big enough to enable the animal to swallow their prey whole, just as the goeal does.
He turns to look at the animal.
Gharials regularly shed their teeth, and here's one I've just picked out of this pool. You can see that they're very simple teeth, just like ichthyosaur teeth. But that's all you need if all you have to do is to grab a fish.
The tooth is smooth, long and pointed. Then a crocodile opening its mouth to take a bite.
So it's likely that our ichthyosaur had teeth and jaws specially adapted to catch small, slippery fish and squid, just like a Gharial crocodile.
A crocodile eating its fish.
Back in Lyme Regis, the work on the bones has taken a dramatic turn. Chris has found that there is fossilised skin over nearly the whole skeleton.
It seems to be virtually covering the whole thing.
It's rare to find any sign whatever of skin on fossils, let alone so much of it. Fionn Smithick, an expert on fossilised skin, has come to take a sample back to his lab.
We can look and see if there's any evidence of the original pigment preserved in the skin.
Oh, it's a lovely piece.
That's really good. That'll be perfect.
Fionn hopes that this remarkably preserved sample might tell us what the skin looked like and even what colour it was. At the University of Bristol, he places a tiny sample of the fossilised skin in a machine that coats its surface with minute particles of gold.
The tiny fragment is covered with gold as it spins round. Then it's placed into the microscope.
They will reflect the rays of a scanning electron microscope. It's astonishing that you can actually see the remains of skin on such an ancient fossil.
Zooming in on the fragment of skin.
But this microscope can also magnify its structure tens of thousands of times.
It reveals a surface covered with rounded tube shapes.
Here, we have exceptional level of preservation of the skin of our ichthyosaur, despite being 200 million years old. So the structures we're looking at here are around half a micrometre across, and a micrometre is 1/1,000,000 of a metre. And you see here these little granules, and these are preserved melanosomes. Now, melanosomes contain the pigment that you have in mammal hair, in bird feathers, and reptile skin. And the abundance of them and the distribution of them can tell us about the overall colour patterns of the animal. So having a high abundance means you're likely to be darker, and having a low abundance means you're likely to be lighter. This area has come from the back. There's a large abundance of these melanosomes. There's a lot of pigment here. And when we look at samples that have come from the bottom of the animal, we don't see this pigment in this level of abundance. So it most likely had a much darker back than it did a belly. And this conforms to a type of colour pattern known as countershading in modern animals.
You can see countershading in lots of sea animals today. Great white sharks, for example.
They have dark grey backs and white fronts.
Both predators and prey are coloured in this way. It makes them more difficult to see, both from above and below.
So this is the first time that we've actually seen evidence of a countershaded pattern in an ichthyosaur.
So that really is a step forward in our knowledge of these
things. It is. And it can tell us a huge amount about the way the animal might have lived.
Just from looking at that picture?
Just from looking at these melanocytes.
Great.
The computer-generated image.
Today, countershaded animals tend to live in open water where there's good visibility. Ichthyosaurs also lived in the open seas, so being camouflaged in this way would have been very valuable to them.
A shark silhouetted against the sun.
The latest scientific research suggests that countershading might also protect against ultraviolet light and even help to regulate body temperature.
The prehistoric animal.
As an air-breathing creature, our ichthyosaur would have had to spend much time near the surface. So countershading could have been a benefit for that reason as well.
Turtles emerging from the surf on a beach.
There are, of course, many marine reptiles still living in the oceans today, like turtles. The biggest of them is the leatherback, whose ancestors, in fact, were around at the same time as the ichthyosaurs. Today, they come ashore to nest in many places, including the Caribbean.
This huge leatherback turtle is laying her eggs. She's hauled her way up from the sea and dug a hole, and now she's depositing about 100 of them. She'll then fill in the hole and then work her way down back to the sea. It's clearly a very laborious process.
And that's the challenge facing all reptiles that live in the sea, having to come onto land to lay eggs.
Ichthyosaurs were reptiles, and they lived in the sea. But they were so well adapted to a life at sea that they gave birth to live young.
And that would have saved the sea dragons making the dangerous journey onto land.
Opening a cabinet.
There is remarkable evidence that ichthyosaurs gave birth to live young in the Stuttgart Museum.
A man slowly pushes back a glass door. Four people push and pull a large flat slab of stone containing the fossilized remains of an ichthyosaur, sliding it out from its glass case. David lies on the floor and peers closely at it.
And here is a truly extraordinary, beautiful, almost poignant fossil. Proof positive that ichthyosaurs gave birth to live young. Here is the baby, just at the moment that it's leaving the birth canal. It comes out tail first, and as soon as it was freed, it would have risen to the surface to take its first breath. But something happened before that did. And here is the proof.
Whatever it was, death must have been instant. So ichthyosaurs gave birth to live babies, just as many sharks do today.
A shark giving birth. The baby moves about, then swims off, its umbilical cord still attached. The wide expanse of the ocean on a calm, sunny day. Then a woman at her computer.
After several weeks of research, the team at Bristol University have managed to reconstruct the skull of the Temnodontosaurus so that they can analyse the power of its jaws.
How do you assess the strength of this animal's bite?
Well, the first thing that we need to know is the volume of muscle that could fit into the back of the skull. So the muscles are attaching around here, and there also there's a group of muscles that are attaching further forward here. And if we know how much muscle volume there is, we can estimate how much force that muscle can generate.
And what did you discover?
We found out that our upper estimate of bite force was around 30,000 newtons. And to put that in a modern day context, that's twice as powerful as the largest saltwater crocodile that's been measured.
Twice as powerful?
Yeah.
So that's enormous. Yeah,
it's a very powerful bite force.
A crocodile grabbing a wild boar and pulling it underwater.
So this must have been the animal with the most powerful bite of its time, must it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, yeah. Of its time, it would have been. Not only did it have a powerful bite, its jaw-closing muscles also attach quite close to the jaw joint. Now, normally in animals where that happens, they have quite a fast but less forceful bite. But the fact that this animal is actually so big means that it has a fast bite, but also, by virtue of its sheer size, also has quite a powerful bite as well, too. So it basically has the best of both worlds.
So this was the king of the Jurassic Sea?
Or queen.
Oh, sorry.
So it seems very likely that Temnodontosaurus was strong enough not only to kill our sea dragon, but to rip its head clean off. It must have been a terrifying battle.
Dark, ominous water, the larger prehistoric creature swims towards the smaller one. It opens its jaws and bites into the smaller ichthyosaur. Blood colours the sea red as the animals fight, a dorsal fin cutting through the surface. Water churns and bubbles rise upwards as the body of the ichthyosaur slowly sinks into the depths of the ocean.
Our investigations have given us a pretty good idea of how our sea dragon died. But can the reconstruction work carried out at Bristol University tell us more about its life? All the blocks containing the fossil have now been scanned. With those scans, the team were able to separate the individual bones and then put them back together to create a 3D image of the ichthyosaur's body before it was attacked. They've added a head based on estimates of other ichthyosaur species.
That's magnificent.
This is the whole animal, and we estimate that it may have been up to around about 4.5 metres long.
Is that bigger than most in the outline?
Yes, this is certainly bigger than most of the ichthyosaurs that we see at Lyme Regis.
Looks huge, looks amazing.
Here are the forelimbs right at the front, and we've got hind limbs here. And at the back, we've got a tail bend. This is supported by the backbone, which extends along the whole length of the body.
But that bend is natural, isn't it? That's not a break. That gives strength to the lower element of the tail for driving it forward.
Much like a shark, the tail bend is the main propulsive organ of the animal.
So could this be a new species?
Yes. These pieces of evidence together suggest that it is going to be a new species. And it's jolly exciting. They don't come along every day.
Historic.
Yes.
This is wonderful news. A sighting by Chris on the beach in Lyme Regis has led to the discovery of a new species of ichthyosaur, adding to our knowledge of these fascinating creatures.
It's extraordinary how much you can discover from one single fossil.
Digital reconstruction has allowed us to rebuild this animal to reveal how it looked and how it moved.
We've discovered, for the first time, that this creature was countershaded. That didn't stop it from being attacked.
By analysing its bones, we've been able to work out that its most likely attacker was a Temnodontosaurus, the most ferocious predator of the seas at that time.
It's been a fascinating journey of discovery, but for me, the real wonder is the bones themselves. I can't wait to see what they look like when they're finally cleaned.
A view of Lyme Regis and its coastline. Chris is in his workshop, inspecting his fossils.
After many months of painstaking and patient preparation, Chris and his team have finally completed their work on the fossil of our ancient sea dragon.
They fit the numerous slabs together on the worktop. He brings David in to see it.
Here it is finished.
Wow. It's really beautiful, isn't it? I mean, it is beautiful, that's for sure.
Thank you. It's a great specimen, isn't it?
Lovely. And how many new species have been discovered in the last 100 years?
Very few. Very, very few. And it's thrilling to find something that's, you know, just never been seen before.
Well, it's a long time spent just revealing the body of this creature. But it's also revealed in this extraordinary story of life and death, predator prey, fighting it out in the seas 200 million years ago, just down there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic story.
Yeah, exciting. Really, really thrilling and romantic.
For Chris, this has been a labour of love, and it's filled in another gap in the paleontological jigsaw. A story that all started with an odd-looking boulder on a Dorset beach.
It's extraordinary to think that some 200 million years ago, exactly here, the greatest predator of its time was swimming around in the sea. And that's what I really love about fossils and fossil hunting. It gives you an extraordinarily vivid insight into what the world was like millions of years before human beings even appeared on this planet.
Standing on the rock-strewn shoreline, he looks out to sea.
Ichthyosaurs died out around 90 million years ago. No one knows why, but standing here and having excavated that spectacular fossil, it's not difficult to imagine a time when dragons really did rule the seas.
Computer-generated film of an ichthyosaur swimming through the dark turquoise sea. It swishes its tail from side to side as it propels itself along. Its long, pointed snout hangs slightly open as it swims. The ichthyosaur glides around through a number of swimming ammonites, then swishes its tail and leaves in a cloud of bubbles.